what perfect songs Brad chose, and you'll see in just a moment, because we're talking about how the way of the cross leads home. But we're so glad to see everyone. After Echo BJ, we got a good house. Good to have Judy and Steve with us. Steve and Vicky, glad you're with us. And I know it's not fair to have pneumonia, is it, in summertime? But Marge, we're glad you're back with us. And with that being said, you're not the only one. Wayne's back with us after an extended absence as well. He had pneumonia. Can you imagine going to Hawaii? It's supposed to be paradise, right? You know, it's finally I get to go and get out of here. And there was spent 3 weeks. I think he said, his wife said he spent one time snorkeling and the rest of the time was sick in bed. He came home and got pneumonia and has been sick then. His son-in-law, who went with him, had not one, not two, but three root canals in Hawaii. Oh, that's where I want to go for my root canal. Well, I guess it's better laying on the beach than it is here at home with all that pain. Can you imagine? But so glad you're back with us, Wayne, because, you know, life is so short on this earth, and it has its good times, and it can have its bad times, broken arms. You know, every time you turn around, it seems like when things are going well, sometimes things go bad. The refrigerator goes out, and all the meat in your freezer spoils. But that's all right, isn't it? Well, why would we say that? Because the disciples were looking for something better. And as disciples of Christ, we follow Jesus not just to learn from him, as we've already saw. We learn from him so we become like him on this earth. But we learn to live like him so someday we will live with him. And that's what we want to concentrate on this morning. Because in this life that we live, so many people are lost. They're searching for something to fill their life with, some type of meaning, some type of purpose. And the world has so many voices saying, come over here, this will make your life fulfilled. This will give you meaning. You're going to feel relevant, significant if you do this. And no matter what it is, in the end, they come to the conclusion like Solomon, vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Number one leading cause of death, other than natural cause among youth, is suicide. And that's sad because you have a generation of people that are increasingly lost. And as God is removed from our society and people do not know about Jesus who's offering something better, in their search, even at an early age, they become so disenchanted, they choose to end their life altogether. But as Christians, we offer something better, don't we? Not because we're offered, but as Jesus who came to this earth is offered it to us. And as the master disciple, our teacher, we follow him because we know he is the way, the truth, and the life. And in following him, we expect something better in this life. And the outcome of it. And that's eternal glory when we live with him in heaven. And that's what we want to concentrate on in this fifth part of our series about following Christ. Because we've already learned that you have to leave something to become a disciple. Because discipleship is following. And you have to leave something that you're following or that's holding you back in order to follow Christ. But in following Christ, the purpose is to learn from him. That's what disciple means, a learner. But we're learning from Jesus so that we can become like Jesus while we're on this earth. And that's our goal, is to become like him in all things, in our conduct, in our word, in our speech. But we know that the ultimate goal is that we want to live with Jesus. And here's the promise. If you follow Jesus and you do not quit in that following, that pursuit, you will end up right where Jesus is. And that's in glory, in heaven, with our Father. Now, that's not a wishful thinking. That's a promise. It is as absolute as your next breath that you will breathe. Now, that's not very absolute, is it? But this is guaranteed that if Jesus means anything as the Creator and as the Son of God who died and rose from the dead, you can count on that you're going to go to heaven with him. And that's what we want to consider as we look at one of my favorite chapters in the book of Luke. It's Luke chapter 9. And I want you to invite your open your Bibles and look at these verses. Some will have on the overhead and some will have to read. I think it's fascinating because here he gives the whole gambit of discipleship in one chapter.
You say, how does he do that? Well, the chapter is 62 verses long, but it's filled with just this wonderful information. And I just want to draw your attention to the latter half of the chapter in verse 51, where we have this verse which we're going to take off from. And here we find that it came about when the days were approaching for his ascension. Your Bible might say departure, or here, though, in the New American Standard, it says his ascension, that he resolutely set his face to go to Jerusalem, that he knows that the time has come, let's get ready, let's go to Jerusalem. Now, there's a connection that you have to understand between the ascension of Jesus and going to Jerusalem. Do you get that? When the ascension's approaching, he says, okay, let's go to Jerusalem. No more side tracks, no more other visits. We're going to Jerusalem. So it makes you ask one question. First of all, what is the ascension which he's speaking of? You might think it's his ascension on the cross, because he was raised up on a cross, but that would be incorrect. Jesus is thinking past the cross at something more important to him personally. Because when we talk about Jesus, there's two practical sides of his work on this earth. There's the work that God gave him. That's his mission. He says, my food is to do the will of the Lord, the work of the Lord. That is his sole purpose, is to do what the Lord sent him to do, be here on this earth for. But on a personal note, there's this other stream that is guiding him and motivating him. One is to glorify God by doing his work. But on the same side, he had his own personal desire. And you know what that was? He's thinking about it. It's in the back of his mind always while he's on this earth. And helps him, motivates him to be pure and fulfill this work. So they're coupled together. And one without the other, they both probably would fail. Well, what is that? Well, it's captured in this word in his ascension. He's not talking about his being ascended or raised up on the cross. And he's not even talking about after he dies, ascending from the grave. But I suggest to you, he's talking about going home. Daniel 7 talks about it. It's a picture of God from the heavens' point of view. And here is the Son of Man ascending from the earth in the clouds. Now, that's not by coincidence. That was prophesied hundreds of years before Mark's account and Matthew's account. In Acts account, when Jesus left this earth, how did he ascend into heaven? But in the clouds. He's called the Son of Man there because he is the prototype of what we are supposed to be on this earth. He is the example of what God intended for us to do as we walk on this earth walking with God. He modeled for us how it is to walk with God, the Son of Man. Four times in chapter 9 of the book of Luke, he refers to himself as the Son of Man. And now the days are approaching for him to go home. He gets to go home and be with his father. Well, how is that connected with let's go to Jerusalem? He resolutely set his face, the American Standard. New American Standard said determined. That means fixed. His faith is set to Jerusalem, and he's not going to look any other direction. What's the connection between going home to heaven and going to Jerusalem? We know that exactly that's it. His will, his food, was to do the will of the Lord. And the will of the Father was that he die on the cross. And we just sang a song, the way of the cross leads home. That was so true for Jesus, and I'm going to suggest it's true for you as well. That Jesus could not go home until he accomplished his work on this earth, and that was to be lifted up on a cross and die to secure our salvation. But after that was done, he could go home. And so he knew that going home forced him to go to Jerusalem. There's no choice in the matter. That he had to go to Jerusalem, he had to face the cross, and then he could go home. Now, we want to look at that on two sides. First of all, just the point of view that Jesus had as fulfilling the will of the Lord. But then we will look at on the personal side about his desire to go to heaven. Now notice he set his face. Matthew chapter 16, this verse we'll just have on the board for you. We see that after Peter confessed that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of God, Jesus said, from that time he began to show his disciples that he must. See this imperative? It's implicit. It's not optional. He had to go to Jerusalem. Why? To suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and raised up on the third day. Now we have the hindsight to look back. Oh, we know where he's talking about his death, burial, and resurrection for our salvation. But his disciples that time, did they have any clue that's what it was about? No. They thought he's going to be coming as a conquering king and sit on an earthly throne in Jerusalem. But we find that in Matthew chapter 20 and also in Luke chapter 9, I do want you to look at that one in verse 44, that again, let these words sink into your ears. Here he refers to himself as the Son of Man. The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men. But they did not understand this statement. And it was concealed from him so they might not perceive it. And they were afraid to ask about his statement. So we learned two things. First of all, he had to go that scripture might be fulfilled. That was God's will for him. But they're so confused. They had no idea what he's talking about. And this death, this theme about dying and suffering and rejection keeps coming up over and over. This is not the first time he's mentioned it. And they're so confused about it, it scares them. We don't want to even ask because we're following you and perhaps it might include us as well. Can you imagine their fear? They don't understand what's going on. But he made it clear that was his will for the Father. Now, so he sets his face to go to Jerusalem. And we know it's to save you and me. They didn't have that understanding. So we see all these texts in the book of Luke. He made his way to go towards Jerusalem. He was teaching the cities as he went, one after another. But his mind, his face was always set on going to Jerusalem. Again, in chapter 70, while he's on his way to Jerusalem, he encounters the 10 lepers and heals them. In Luke chapter 18, he says, look, we're going up to Jerusalem. What's this fascination about going to Jerusalem? We know. Because what? The way of the cross leads home. Now, he had a lot of angst in thinking about that because we know when he got to Jerusalem, he prayed three times that this cup would pass from him. But he said, nevertheless, let your will be done, not mine. So he had to set his face. Now, I had the privilege to ride with some friends of ours in a carriage being held by, drawn by these draft horses. And the draft horses, you know what they put on their harness and all their headgear? Blinders. And the blinders cover the sides of the eye, correct? And if you walk up alongside, they can't see you there. You could startle them. Why do you put blinders on horses that are pulling a carriage? So they go the direction you're pointing them, and they don't get distracted and wander off. Is that not right? Did Jesus have blinders on? There's many allurements and attractions in this world, and they're not all bad. Some of them are good. God put them there for us. But Jesus set his face to go to Jerusalem because he had one priority, singular, in his life, and that's to die on the cross. And there's a lesson here for us. If you want to go to heaven, Jesus says, I'll take you. It's a free gift. You just have to have enough faith in me to trust me to follow me wherever I lead you. But I ask this one thing of you. You follow me wherever I take you. And your singular goal and your only priority in life has to be, must be, to get to heaven with me. Because if that's not your face and it's not set to get to heaven and to follow him no matter where he leads you, you will be distracted. You will wander off on a different path. If it was what Jesus had to do, I would suggest we're going to have to do the same. It's an interesting thought. You can pursue it on your mind. What if Jesus would have sinned once? First of all, we know he couldn't have been the sacrificial lamb for our own souls, correct? He gave himself as a ransom for our lives. He gave his life because it was innocent for our lives that was guilty. If he sinned once, he only could die for himself. Have you ever thought about this? If he sinned, could he go back to be with his Father? While he was on this earth. See, he's like a foreign worker, a United States worker in a foreign land, doing work for a business. He's doing the business of the Father. He's a citizen of heaven. And he's come down to this foreign land, earth. And if he stumbles just once, could he go back home to be with his Father? You see what is riding on this mission here on this earth? It wasn't an easy task. So when it says he set his face, he had to have this priority and this focus that was unwavering. And there's a lesson for you and I to be learned from that. I want you to consider Luke chapter 9 and verse 51 that we just read in the beginning of our service here. And verse 52, we see that he already sets his face. So he sends messengers ahead of them to make preparations in the village that he's about to come to, the Samaritan village. Verse 53, they didn't receive him. You have to listen to the words because they all mean something to us. Because it says he was journeying with his face set towards Jerusalem. So in other words, when he was traveling towards Jerusalem, there's something about his demeanor and something about the language and the way they communicate everything. They knew, you're going to Jerusalem. You can't stay here because there was this issue between the Samaritans and the Jews. It's sort of like when you go to the airport and there's people all over going through security and at the gates. Can you pick the people that are going to Hawaii? It's easy. Why? Because they're wearing their silly shirts with flowers on them. You would never wear them any other time. Are there any flowered shirts here? I don't want to make fun of you, but I will. When someone's wearing a flowered Hawaiian shirt, you know they're going to Hawaii. And as a Christian, do you think the world knows where we're headed? By our dress, by our conduct, by our face, where it's set. If they could see Jesus is going, they're going to know if we are. That's what it means to be set. Now, because of that, we see this indignation of James and John. His disciples, James and John, said, Lord, they said, this is an outrage. They're not accepting you, the coming king, to be received into their village. Do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them? Now, before you get all upset, is that a legitimate statement? When you're living in a culture, a generation of shame and pride and nobility, and you honor the king, and Jesus is the king, and when you reject the king, that means wrath comes upon you. So you can understand why they might think this. But au contraire, Jesus says, he rebuked them. I don't know how the language was, but he said, you don't know what kind of spirit you are of. Your disposition inside, your whole attitude's wrong. It's not me against them and them against you, even though it looks that way. For the Son of Man, here's the next time we see it being used. He didn't come to destroy men's lives, but to save them. Let's go to another village. We didn't change our focus. We're still going to where? Jerusalem. But I don't get sidetracked by distractions and problems along the way. If I have to go around, I'll go around. We're going to Jerusalem. That was his goal. That was his will. In Zacchaeus' accounts in chapter 19 of verse 10, he said, the Son of Man has come to seek and to save the lost. That's what he was on the earth for, as a foreign worker for the Lord. But what was he thinking personally? And here is the second reason he set his face. The first reason being is to save us. He had to go to Jerusalem to die on the cross. He knew that. The second reason, though, is married to it. And I would suggest it helps and motivate him to follow through on his will. Because he knew as soon as the job's done, I get to go home. Why do we look towards Friday? Because it's Friday and Saturday's a day off. It's a weekend. And Jesus thought the same way. As soon as I get to Jerusalem, the work's done. I get to go home. He's looking for the days of his ascension. They were near. He was really close. And that's what we see. He says, yep, the Son of Man must suffer. We already read that. But notice some of this other language that we find in chapter 9 that I want to just impress upon you. It was on the back of his mind continually. And this is, one of the most significant events. It's in chapter 9, the Transfiguration. So in chapter 9 and verse 28, they goes up on the mountain with Peter, James, and John to pray. And while they're praying, there's this, well, he's transfigured. That means he changes somehow, and he starts shining. Mark says, shiny or whiter than any launderer could make. Brighter than tide, right? And he's just, it's so amazing that when Peter sees it, he falls down on his face, right? But he's shining, and his clothes are shining and gleaming. But verse 30, behold, two men were talking with him. And it's Moses of the Old Testament and Elijah, the chief prophet. Now, it's interesting because what would they were talking about? And we've mentioned this before, but some of you maybe never read this. Of all the things they could be talking with Jesus about, like, what's it like being one of them? Because remember, he's our creator. He spoke the universe into existence, and he made you and me after his image. He was living in glory, and he emptied himself, all of that, to become a humble servant. Not the best-looking one either. And being submitted to all the trials and temptations of one of us. That probably would be one of my questions. Like, what's it like, Lord? How do you do it? How do you put up with it without, you know, putting an end to them? I'm not talking about that. Are you ever tempted, like you were in the wilderness, to just take control and set up an earthly kingdom? What were they talking about? Here it is. The only thing that's left for us by the Holy Spirit for your and my consideration. They might have talked about many things, but only one thing is recorded. And while appearing in glory, they were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish. Where? Where? Jerusalem. It all happens in Jerusalem. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus are talking about the day he gets to go home. And that just tells me one thing, that's what's on his mind constantly. Yes, it's the cross, but the way of the cross leads home. And you know, if that's what he's talking about, when that's what he's most passionate about, yes, he's here to honor God and please God, but he just wants to go home. As anyone would who's living in a foreign land, especially in the conditions in which you encounter when living among us, the creator among the creation. He said, well, what good does that do us? As disciples, you have to see this. If you don't quit, if you continue to follow Jesus, learn from Jesus, live like Jesus, someday you will live with Jesus. Yeah. It's guaranteed. It's a promise that following him will take you home with Christ. And that's the greatest joy. That is our motivation. We already talked about the what of discipleship. It's following, it's learning, it's becoming like. Then you ask, well, why? Why do that? Why not just enjoy this life and what it has to offer? This is why, because there's glory waiting for you and me, and you don't want to give up on that glory. It surpasses anything that could be imagined on this earth. And it's waiting there for you. It's guaranteed. Just don't quit. That's all. See, that's it. No, just don't quit. Don't quit worshiping. Don't quit exercising your faith. Don't quit praying. Don't quit reading his word. Don't quit trying to help others. Just keep exercising your faith. And you'll be there. Now, he might lead us to our own Jerusalem. And we'll have to come back to that. He asks in chapter 9, verse 41, when some people bring some demon-possessed person, they said, the disciples, your disciples couldn't cast them out. And he said, oh, you unbelieving generation, how long will I put up with you? The emphasis there is what? How long? He's been doing this day after day, encountering the same doubts and mistrust. Is there a little weariness perhaps in his voice? And maybe some rebuking as well? How long? Won't be very long, will it, Lord? Because the days of your ascension are approaching. How long? And of course, that's the text we started with. When it finally got really close, he said, let's go to Jerusalem now. The time is fulfilled. So when you consider all those things, we see these two things being married together. John chapter 17 and verse 3. In his prayer to the Father, right before he dies on the cross, he said, I have accomplished the work which thou hast given me to do. Now glorify me with the glory I once had before you. That's a beautiful part of the prayer. I have accomplished. It's done. I'm finished. Because he's about to be betrayed and put on the cross. It's all in motion. He says, now, what's he asking in the prayer? Glorify me. Give me the glory that I once had. He just wants to go home. Now, here's where we got to stop and reflect about ourselves. John 14, please turn there. We don't have time to look at the cultural backgrounds of marriage in their day. But Jesus is talking about himself likened to a groom being married to the bride, where he goes home and builds a house for his bride, and then at the appropriate time when the father says go, he goes and gets his bride and brings her home. And that's exactly what he's talking about in chapter 14, verse 1. He said, don't let your heart be troubled. Yeah, I'm leaving. You trust God? Well, trust me also. Notice verse 2. In my Father's house, that's in heaven, there are many dwelling places. Now, Jesus is going to go to live back there in glory. He said, if it were not so, I wouldn't have told you. I'm not lying. I'm not making this up. There are many places, and I go to prepare a place for you. Would you write, cross out you and put your name there? I'm serious. You need to personally take this personal and said, I'm going to prepare a place for you, Jack. Because that's the promise of discipleship. You will have a room, not a literal room, but it'll have your name on it if you would want to think that way. And he said, if it weren't so, I wouldn't tell you. I'm not lying. And if I go, here's the promise. If I ascend into heaven and prepare a place for you, I will come again. Why? One sole purpose in this context, to receive you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. Did you get that? That's his sole purpose, to send back into glory. And the promise, the last promise he leaves is, I'm coming back. And I'm coming back to bring you home if you're my faithful disciple and that follows me. Now, who does that rely on? Ourselves to find our way there? That's a free gift of Christ. It's a promise. If I just want, keep following him. Now, Thomas goes, Lord, we don't even know where you're going. So how are we going to know how to get there? Now, is that a fair question from his earthly perspective? We have hindsight looking back. So, Thomas, you should have known. No, he shouldn't. Jesus says, I'll tell you, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. But verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no man comes to the Father but by me. So let's talk about the days of our departure. I don't know when it's going to be. For some of it, it'll be sooner than others. And some of it will become unexpectedly a surprise. It's tragic when a young person loses their life because we say their life was cut short. They died before their time. I'll say this now because we're not mourning over a lost one. How do we know when your time is? We say that, and it's because from an earthly point of view, earthly, we're meant to live here a long time, right? Get married, have children, do whatever you do on life, and then die at an old age. Well, if someone dies at a young age, we say, well, they died before their time. Their life was cut short. Were they? Did it? That's spoken just from an earthly point of view, isn't it? But when you look at a heavenly point of view, what is God thinking when he says, your time is up right now? Maybe he's saving that person from future misery by taking them home to heaven right now. Now, I would dare say anyone that we've received into that dwelling place that Christ is preparing for him and is living in glory, if you ask him, do you want to come back? Because you're only 18. Would you like to live a few more, 50 more years? What would they say resoundingly? No, get out of here. But we continue to mourn. And rightfully so. We mourn with those that mourn. We weep with those who weep. But we should not mourn for that person if they were a disciple of Christ. Because they're at home in glory. I don't know when your day is. But you know it's coming. You came to this world naked. And you're going to leave naked. You're going to leave everything behind. The only thing that matters is if you make it home. It's the only thing that matters. This is one of the lessons we learned. Falling to Christ, Following Christ to heaven defines a successful life. It's the only definition that I will offer up to you for a successful life. You say, well, what do you mean by that? The world has so many markers to determine whether you've been a success. It might be money, it might be fame, it might be all sorts of things. But I'm going to suggest to you that if you don't make it to heaven, a person, they have wasted their life on this earth. It's all been for naught. They might have enjoyed some good things, which are given to us by God to enjoy. But if they so distracted them because they didn't have blinders on them, that they didn't follow Christ and make it to heaven, what a waste. The thing I could liken it unto is someone that fails to graduate from college. So what do you mean? Can you imagine spending $80,000 on a college education and you're one semester short of graduating and you just drop out? So, man, what a waste of money and time. Well, how about then a person that doesn't finish high school? Because a lot of times that happens. They just need one more class. And if they get that one more credit, they can graduate. And for some reason, whatever, they just drop out. And we know that if you just go back and get a GED or do something, do online study, you can get in college, you can make something yourself. You go, what a waste of 12 years of life, beginning with first grade all the way up through 12 years. And you didn't finish. But wait a second, that didn't even work, that comparison. Because I can offer to you people that never graduated from high school or college and were wildly successful in this world's point of view. First one I think of, Bill Gates. He was a dropout from, did you know where he dropped out from? Harvard. I got his quote. I got to read it to you. By the way, one of the richest men in the world. I realized the error of my ways. And I decided I could make do with a high school diploma. You know what his error of his way was? Going to college. Oh, boy. Parents, or children, kids, teenagers, high school. I'm not saying don't go to college. And I'm not trying to work against your parents. You need to go to college, get an education. But if you got Bill Gates' mind and think, okay, then drop out, all right? Steve Jobs, he went to Reed College in Portland, one of the most expensive universities in the United States, dropped out. I think when he died, his net worth was like $14 billion. Do you think going to college is necessary to be successful in this life? I can give you example after example. The singer, Aretha Franklin, dropped out of high school at age 15. Richard Branson, you know who he is? The owner of Virgin and all the industries and all the companies he owned. He's getting spaceships to go out into space. He dropped out of high school at 15. Here's an odd name that only maybe the women would know. It's Rachel Ray. Oh, yeah, some of you watch TV. She's a TV cooking star, and she's never had any formal training in the culinary skills, didn't go to college yet. Her net worth is $60 million. Do you waste your life if you don't go to college? No. But if you make millions and you don't make it to heaven, you've wasted your life. You came to this world naked with a lot of skills, a lot of opportunities, but you'll leave naked. And if you don't make it to heaven, it's so sad. It's so sad. Especially, you know, all you have to do is follow him. And just continue to follow him, and you'll be there. It's waiting, glory. And I just quit. So, again, I'll suggest to you that following Christ to heaven defines a successful life. And what it also does, it helps me, it defines our path in life. Because a lot of people are wondering, well, what do I do? Where do I go? How do I decide what to do? Jesus said, I am the way. That's a path, isn't it? A way. I am the truth, and I'm life at the end of the path. No man can go to the Father but how? Through me, discipleship. Now, people claim, well, I think that's a little exclusive, and I object to that rigid way of thinking, because I think all paths can lead to heaven. I go, wait a second, oh, really? You object. Oh, really? Here's Jesus, the creator of the heavens and the earth, who made, they just have a new telescope that fired up the first time. They saw 14 galaxies. No, wasn't more 14, was it 14,000 galaxies? I don't remember. In a spot where they thought there was just a few. This universe is so large that he just spoke it into existence. He's the one that holds it all together, and it was all made by him and for him. And you object to his statement that no one can come to Father but through him? I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you object with our Creator. Who has a smartphone? I know there was one over here somewhere. I heard it. Who's got a smartphone? Oh, good. Here's a smartphone. All right. So how much do these cost? $600-$700 if you buy them without a contract? There was a time in Oregon you only had to dial 7 digits to call someone, correct? And January 10th in 2006, I think it was, all the state of Oregon says went to 10-digit dialing. So one of you buys a smartphone, spends $700, and and you go, what's wrong? Is this stupid phone? I'm dialing this number, I can't reach anyone. Well, what are you doing? Well, I'm dialing the church building, 362-6917, and it just says error, network error. Stupid phone. So, well, stupid phone. It's a smartphone. It could be operator error. Didn't you realize you had to dial 10 digits, the error code plus 362, 503-362-6917. Oh, really? Yes, you have to dial 10, count them, 10, not 9, not 11, 10. And you have to dial them in the sequence that they were given to you. 503-362-6917. If you mess up the order, you're going to reach Joe's Bar and Grill. All right? Well, I don't like that. That's too exclusive. Oh, really? You don't like it. You protest. Did you set up the network, the cell network? Were you on the FCC, the federal board that helped control and regulate all this? You object, huh? Now, it's a silly illustration, but I think it's profound because we understand absolutes, don't we? But when Jesus comes along, our Creator, and said, no one comes to the Father but through me. I am the way. There's the power. I am the truth. I'm the life. People object. Thank you. Appreciate that. But isn't that right? And it's so humble to say, Lord, I'll follow you. I'll follow you wherever you go. Third thing, and we'll wrap this up. Following Christ to heaven defines our purpose on this life. So it gives our goal. We get to go to heaven. It gives our path, and it gives our purpose. Jesus said, I come to seek and save the lost. If that was his sole mission on this earth, and afterwards he wanted to go home, I would suggest that that's our purpose as well. That in some way and somehow, the most important thing in life that defines success is going to heaven. I want it for you as badly as I want it for myself. If that's the only thing that makes life worthwhile and meaningful on this earth, why wouldn't I want it for you as well as myself? So my goal has to be, as I follow Christ, as I learn from him and become like him, is to seek others for him. I suggest that's why you see some of our men, like our elders, Hewlin, he's not here. He stood up here more than once and he's cried. And you know what the context of all those tears came from? When he's talking about family or souls that he wanted desperately to go to heaven. What is a grown man that's successful in the world's eyes cry in front of a group of you? Because he understands what's really important in life. And all he wants desperately is to go to heaven himself and to take you with him. And that's why we let our light shine before men. In such a way, when they see our good works, they glorify our Father in heaven. See, it's not about good works. We're going to be rich in them. But why? So people will be attracted to Christ and our Father, and they will follow Jesus as well. We're trying to win them over by our good acts, our love, our compassion, by our kind words, but also with the gospel. That's our whole passion in life. And that's why we have balance in life. We can enjoy the things that come our way, and we enjoy them with them, but we keep pointing to heaven. We enjoy the outdoors. We enjoy the immense prosperity the Lord has given us. We enjoy our time. We enjoy our families. But we have blinders, don't we? We don't let those things distract us. We just want to get to heaven, and we want you to go as well.
Because any other life is a wasted life. And so as we bring this lesson to close, it's a simple lesson. But the day of our departure's come. I would like to develop perhaps another time, but your Jerusalem is set before you. And what I mean by that is Jesus had to go to Jerusalem to suffer. And Jesus promises one thing, that if you follow me and you leave all, he said to Peter, I'll give you in this life houses and families and 100 times more and persecution. And in the age to come, eternal life. It's a promise that somewhere in your path in following Christ, you're going to go to your own Jerusalem. The Lord's going to ask you to give up something or suffer something for his cause. And the only way that you'll get through it is by submitting yourself humbly to the will of God and not your own and looking to the joy beyond that burden, that cross. And what is that joy? It's going home. I just want to go home. I have family members that have passed before me, mother and father and babies I've never met or brothers and sisters. I just want to go home and meet them. I've read about David and Moses and Sarah, and I've read about people like Esther, the queen, and I just want to be in glory with them. I just want to see Jesus. And I just want to bow before him and my Father and say thank you. We just want to go home. The way of the cross leads home. If we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?